Welcome back to the Crash Course Podcast. My name is Craig Crash Collins. Alongside me is Brandon Scott. He is back. We, it's been literally over a month since you last saw him. June 1st was our last podcast that we recorded together. But we are indeed back. We've got a lot to talk about. We've got the NCAA making new rules about players using their name, image, and likeness. We're also going to talk some Pacers offseason, as well as the NBA Finals as the Bucks get ready to take on the Suns. It's going to be a lot of fun. B. Scott, first of all, you know you're a little sunburned, man. How's the hiatus been for you?
It's been busy, and I'm sunburned because I just got back from a small little family vacation. But yeah, it's been busy. You just got back from vacation? No. I spent the hiatus covering being the social media voice of college baseball for at NCAA CWS, covering the college baseball tournament from start to finish. I've been on it watching every game from the very first pitch to the very last out. And I'll tell you what, it's been a roller coaster of a ride. I can say I've officially been the voice of one of the most hated Twitter accounts or social media accounts in all of America for a time, and it looks like it still potentially is. But it was an eye-opening experience to get to be covering the College World Series and witness Mississippi State win their first team national championship in any sport ever. So some history was made. You know, and they actually knocked off the defending champions, the Vanderbilt Commodores, who won in the last CWS back in 2019. Saw some great pitching performances, saw some unbelievable offensive outbursts. It was great. One of the highlights for me, like I was telling you off air, was watching the games, being able to listen to the home plate umpire mic'd up each and every game. And I don't think I could ever watch a baseball game again without having access to hearing what the umpire is saying, because that provided some comical relief at times. It was a whirlwind. And for people that don't know, the reason we were the most hated account was because of heading into the last weekend of the semifinals, the winner take all semifinal between Vanderbilt and NC State. NC State had an outbreak of COVID. And they ultimately, on Friday of the semifinals, decided they were going to play with only 13 players, four pitchers and nine position players. And some of those position players were actually pitchers that had played those positions in high school. And then after some more testing of their vaccinated players, some vaccinated players came back testing positive for COVID as well. And unfortunately, we had to release a press release at about 2:15 in the morning, Saturday morning, saying that they were going to have to withdraw from the tournament, ultimately meaning Vanderbilt was then going to advance on to the finals. It was a rough situation for everybody involved. You know, you don't want to have to see that, because NC State was the darlings of the whole entire tournament. I mean, they knocked off the number one team in the country in Arkansas. They were working their way through the winner's bracket and until the COVID situation happened. And it was unfortunate to see that. But there was a lot of things said about us on Twitter, and you just kind of have to let it roll right off your back when you're running it. I was even called some pretty nasty names. They didn't know me personally, but they, you know, whoever's running this account, must be an unpaid intern. Well, I'm not an unpaid intern, but you know, yeah. But it was a great experience, because just to see all the highs and the lows and the roller coaster of all emotions, and then rain delays. You know, there was game that the reason we put that press release out so late, it was like about 2:15 in the morning. It was only 1:15 over in Omaha, but we were getting ready to start back up the last inning of Texas versus Mississippi State. That game made it to the last inning, and then a storm rolled in. So that got delayed a couple hours, and they went ahead and decided, the higher ups, the people way above me, decided that we were going to release this. So, we got to do what we got to do.
And right.
Protocols are protocols in the end.
Yeah, they really are. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds like a fantastic experience, you know, really cool that you were able to do that. Of course, like you said, Mississippi State does win the College World Series 2-1 over Vandy. The Bulldogs did drop game one, and then they took the final two games of the series by a combined 21-2, game three by a 9-0 score. And yeah, it's very, we talked about it off air a little bit, how weird, kind of peculiar it is that Mississippi State and SEC school has not won a championship in any sport. Cause you know, we talked about, you know, maybe basketball, maybe football, like maybe those two sports make sense. But when you start, you know, breaking it down, like really not like rowing or lacrosse, well, or know,
they've
track.
They've won individual titles before, especially in track. They're good in track. I think they've won a cross country championship. Like an individual runner. I know they think they've won. We also read pole vault. They won in pole vault 1 year. You know, they've had individual champions in those sports, but you would think for an SEC school, and especially with them, how good they've been for so long in baseball, for them to have never won a championship in baseball even was kind of surprising to me as well. But, you know, it was interesting because that last game on Monday night, Tuesday, I don't know. My days are all so mixed up. When you're working from your days are going into 3 a.m. and your work days are basically 2 days. It's so confusing. But the game three, it was very highly touted because you had Vanderbilt's ace, who's going to go in the top five of the draft, Kumar Rocker, versus Mississippi State's ace, Will Bednar, who earlier in the CWS tied the record for most individual strikeouts with 15. And, you know, he didn't have that dominant of a performance, like strikeout wise, but he was just on it again. Kumar had a good performance, but unfortunately for him, the back end of his defense, the middle of the defense, middle infield, just completely forgot how to play baseball those last two games. Routine ground balls were impossible for the second baseman to handle. And it was just something like, are you kidding? And then for a while, even Kumar was having struggles with this. They just could not find the strike zone, the pitchers for Vanderbilt. And at one point they walked. It was some ridiculously high. It was like, I think in game two, they walked like 12 batters. And there was like 4 runs that were scored just from walking batters. It made the game drag on forever, but it was really interesting just kind of to see how the wheels just fell off, especially after they were really dominant performance in game one with Jack Leiter on the mound, another pitcher who's probably going to go number one overall in the draft here in the next few weeks. But it was just really interesting to see how they devolved almost. But I was really excited to see Mississippi State because that's a hardworking team. It was fun covering them all year, and they were just a blast to watch.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. And so glad, yeah, like I said, glad you got that experience. And you talked about having, you know, the umps mic'd up. That's something that, I mean, heck, Major League Baseball has kind of wanted to have. So that'd be a cool thing to add on. But yeah, it sounds like a fun experience. And the reason why we bring it up is to kind of segue into something that happened while the College World Series was going on.
Yeah, right before our last game.
Right, exactly. that the NCAA has made rule changes to allow athletes to make money off of their name, image, and likeness. Athletes can now be paid for endorsements and public appearances. Schools will not be able to pay athletes directly. We kind of, you know, knew that. Athletes can also now hire agents to negotiate some of these endorsement deals. So, you know, finally college athletes can make money off of, you know, their, you know, performance and that kind of stuff, you know, as far as, you know, those performances leading to endorsements and speaking opportunities and stuff. So athletes can now technically get paid, which is really cool to see. And for me, you know, as far as, you know, reacting to that, it's about time. I know that this particular topic has been in the works for a long time. And now it finally happens. The debate had been for years on how you were going to pay players, because, you know, I think the long time the argument was like, well, the schools can't really do it because, you know, obviously football and basketball generate the most income, but like there are some other sports that technically lose money, and football and basketball helps pay for those other sports. So how do you take the revenue from that? and, you know, allocate it to, you know, the, you know, other teams. And then also, like, obviously, you know, the star quarterback, you know, you know, Trevor Lawrence, you know, at Clemson is going to be making more than, you know, a men's soccer player. So how do you make it fair, but also like make it a decent amount, you know? So there was always some sort of hiccup, and there wasn't really a way to do it from like the schools being like a professional team and being like, all right, well, you're allocated this, you're allocated that. So this basically puts the onus on the players. Like, okay, you know what? You want to be able to make money, then you, it's up to you. Go do that. You go get a deal with Nike, you go advertise, you know, you go do a speech at your local, you know, or at your former high school, you know, whatever. So, so I think that's the best way to go. And I'm also interested to see how this affects recruiting, because it makes another wrinkle into a subject we talked on the last Crash Course podcast with Chris Simmons. And I know B. Scott will probably eventually talk about it a few times, is the fact that, you know, obviously the NCAA is also considering it expanding the college football playoff to 12 teams. And so it'll be interesting to see how, you know, the fact of, okay, you know what? You know, one of the things I talked about being good about the college football playoff going to 12 teams is now you can literally go with the way that it's formatted. You can go to literally, you know, any player, any college football player, you know, in down the line who's being recruited now, you know, any, you know, a high school player right now that's going to be in college football and say, hey, you have an actual chance to win a national championship now. You have a chance to go perform on a national stage. So now, if a player is going to go be, you know, the fourth string quarterback in at Alabama and might play his senior season, does he now go to maybe an Auburn or even like a UAB or something like that, so he can maybe get on that national stage a little bit more, get a little bit more exposure to make more off endorsement deals? So, you know, it would be interesting to see how the possibility to make money off of your name will impact how recruiting goes. Because like I said, if you're going to go be, you know, a bench warmer for 3 years, heck, you might go to a smaller school and that might disperse some of the talent a little bit. So I'm really excited to see what the residual effects of this will be.
So, yeah, I think it's about time for this as well. I totally agree. From what I understand, just from reading over the press releases and everything like that, I may be off base here on it. I don't know. I didn't look too deeply into it just because I had other things going on at the time.
How dare you be, Scott?
From my high overview understanding is that the NCAA is not really going to, they don't have set guidelines for this. They're saying we're going to allow this. However, if you are a school that's located in a state that has laid out state legislation about this, you need to follow your state legislation. If you are in a school that does not have state legislation, then look to your conference. Your conference should have legislation about this as well. So that's how it's going to go. The NCAA is still going to look at those, the schools paying players. That's still going to be something that the NCAA will always look at, because that's still going to be something that's going to be tried to slip under the rug. However, now the NCAA can come back and say, okay, yeah, okay, this player all of a sudden $20,000 showed up in their bank account. Show us the receipts for what they did to earn that, you know, like, and show us proof that, okay, yeah, they were paid $20,000 to go sign autographs for 2 hours. Prove it, you know, those types of things. So they're going to be fighting the under the table stuff to still, and I think this is going to start pushing that away. It's going to be harder for the under the table stuff to happen. But as far as the recruiting goes, like my dad and I were talking about this over the weekend, I don't see this affecting recruiting very much at all. Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia and Auburn are still going to get the ones that they're battling each other for. You know, it's the top dogs that are going to be fighting for the top dog players. And then the trickle down, you know, there's going to be the Purdue's and the Michigan States, the Minnesota's, the Wisconsin's that are going after that next tier. You know, everybody's still going to get slotted into their tiers just because you're some two-star player. Yeah, you've always wanted to go play for if you're from the state of Alabama, you've always wanted to go play for Alabama. But does that mean now because you can get endorsements, you're going to go to Alabama no matter what? yeah, you can go try to walk on, but guess what? Nobody's giving an endorsement to a walk on at Alabama.
I'm kind of saying the opposite though. What I'm saying is, like, if you're one of the many 5-star players that goes to Alabama, let's say you're Mac Jones and you're, you know, NFL material, but right now you're behind, you know, Tua and, you know, all the other quarterbacks that Alabama had, basically, as they just reel off, you know, quarterback after quarterback. So what if instead of staying in Alabama, he says, okay, you know what? I can go to Auburn and make, you know, I can be the face of Auburn football and make money off that.
We were already seeing that recently here with the transfer rule. Already seeing
it. You are able to make money, though.
I know. At that time you weren't. No, but I just don't see it affecting I mean, maybe you might see it like, okay, let's say the state of Indiana gets like a really high rated 4-star, 5-star kid. He may look at staying at Purdue or Indiana, maybe Notre Dame even. More so than, because a lot of times these big, highly rated recruits from the state of Indiana have been jumping state lines and going to play for Ohio State. Very few of them end up becoming a name. I mean, yeah, you got your Terry McLaurin, obviously. That's you know, one. But, you know, they get lost in the shuffle. But you know what? A lot of these 18-year-olds are going to go through that regardless. They're going to go somewhere and they're going to realize, I'm not the star here. I'm not getting noticed. And then they're going to use the transfer rule. So I don't think it's going to affect recruiting up front. It's going to affect recruiting with the transfer portal, which we're already seeing because of the one-time transfer rule.
Right, so but you still have to sit out.
No, you don't.
You don't have to sit out a year anymore?
If you the first
oh, yeah,
time
that's right. They didn't change that.
Yeah, the first time you transfer now, you do not have to sit out, or if you're a grad student already. Now, the second time you transfer, you do have to sit out.
Right.
Unless you can truly, truly, truly prove hardship. Because at that point, it's like, do you really have hardship, or are you just jumping ship again? But I think where this could potentially affect recruiting is a conversation that's already been started prior to NIL being passed. It was ever since the transfer portal rule came about earlier this year. It's now going to be, okay, how many high school players are coaches going to look to take? I mean, this is going to affect more football than it is basketball. Basketball is always going to be basketball because, let's just be honest, there's not as many we all know there's not as many players in basketball as there are in football. And there's not, you know, the transfers are not as large of an equation in basketball as they are in football. So in football, you're already starting to see it. You're already starting to see coaches take smaller recruiting classes from the high school ranks and then use up more of their scholarship allotment each year on the transfer portal. We've seen, I mean, Purdue has used that significantly this past year. And are already setting themselves up for it for next year as well. So I think where you're going to see recruiting get affected has nothing to do with NIL, but everything about transfer portal and really the NIL is going to eventually affect the transfer portal, because players are going to see, man, I thought I could come here and be an instant starter, which NIL or no NIL, you're still going to see players do that because they want to get on the field and play because they want to make it to the next level, essentially.
Right. Man. But when you have that added incentive of I can not only go play right away, but I can also get a, you know, endorsement deal or more speaking opportunities or opportunities to sign autographs. Like, you don't think an 18-year-old kid can read a depth chart and read 24/7 recruiting and see
their ego. Their ego is telling them, man, look.
Well, okay. So maybe
of my high school, I'm the star of my city. Everybody knows who I am. I'm going to go to Alabama and I'm going to take that program over. I'm going to take it by storm. They show up. They got this ego already. They show up to Alabama and all of a sudden the star of every high school is there playing against them in practice. And it's not just a walk in the park anymore. They're not playing against some scrub from, you know, down the street in, you know, Thornburg, Indiana. You know, it's now, this is the best of the best where I'm playing up against in practice. And I actually got to prove myself. So once push comes to shove, they're going to see them hit the transfer portal. And we've seen that anyways already, where they want to get in somewhere where they can shine, where they can actually get some PT rather than what they're getting now. But yes, you are correct. Add on top of the ability to go somewhere else and be the star, to be the big name starter and earn those endorsement deals through that. Yes, that it's going to be an added bonus, but really what's going to happen is the Auburns, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Georgias, and Notre Dame's, Clemson's, they're going to get theirs. They're going to get theirs. No matter what, they're always going to get theirs. Where your scenario is going to start affecting, it's going to start affecting the trickle down to teams like the Wisconsins, like the Purdue's, like the Texas Techs, like the Baylor's, and so on and so on. Those are the schools that are not landing the big five-star names every year, or any at that matter. But when those players start looking for opportunities elsewhere, not just for playing time, but for endorsement deals, that's when these other schools are going to sit there with their arms wide open and say, here's what we can do for you. And honestly, the schools that are setting themselves up best for this, just go and look, you can look up, okay, schools with the highest performing football social media, schools with the highest performing basketball social media. I think it's Hootsuite puts out rankings every single month of the top 25 social accounts. Those are the schools that you need to look to, because like I can say from just reading articles and everything about Purdue, I know I use Purdue as examples, but that's the team I follow. And you look at some of the stuff that they do. Prior to even NIL, they had their social media department working with their student athletes on how to better promote themselves on social media. Well, you know, that's free. There's no money being exchanged there. They're a brand themselves. So a lot of programs and schools have already been working towards this NIL situation and working with their student athletes on social media, how to better build your brand on social media. They've even included their schools of businesses. I know Purdue has included Cranert School of Business in putting together a plan to present to student athletes in recruiting about how Purdue can help them build their name, image, likeness, build their brand, essentially. So that's the difference in recruiting now. It's not just, here's our facilities, here's what we've done in the past. Oh, and by the way, here's what our school looks like, but it's now what we can do for you. Yeah. So that's where you're going to see the effect. I think you're going to see smaller recruiting battles from in-state. Like I think on the basketball side of things, it's going to be a big battle between Purdue and Indiana, because Purdue can say, look, this is what we've done recently. This is what we can do for you. And IU, all they got to say is we're the household brand, regardless of what we do on the court in the state of Indiana.
Real quick before we get into a little bit of hot and cold. So I'm genuinely curious, is this legal? If so, obviously, you know, schools, you know, there's some schools that are, you know, Nike, some schools that are Adidas, some schools, you know, whatever. So could a coach and Nike like get together to then like be like, hey, if you come to our school, okay. Nope. I didn't know if that was legal now.
Once the kid gets to the school, I don't think, because what we're seeing so far is these top level athletes are signing endorsements deals with like Barstool Sports.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to see these big name brands like Nike or Adidas sign anybody to a big contract until there is a lot more, let's see what, you know, a lot more rules set in place, more guidance. Plus also one, are you really going to sign an eight? I mean, the NBA, like when the kid went straight to the NBA and out of high school, it was one thing because it was the pros. But are you really going to sign an unproven 18-year-old college basketball player?
And I mean, somebody else,
somebody else said, hey, you know, when these kids sign on, when these businesses sign these kids, they need to realize that kid is now promoting your brand, not just the name, not just the kid you see on TV performing, all of that. This is what comes with it also is the drunk 3 a.m. on a Saturday night IG story live rants.
But again, like you say, I mean, because that's like, I mean, that stuff's going on anyway, and they're still getting drafted, and those teams are saying you're representing us now. So like, I mean, the point I was getting to is For one, like, you're telling me Zion, like, when he came out of
a special talent like Zion,
right? But you said they would never.
I don't think they would, though. I don't think they would.
You don't think Nike would say, hey, we already supplied Duke equipment
on a general year? I don't think so. But like if for instance,
for one year, you're gonna get him ahead of anybody else before he gets to the NBA.
I think you might. See, but in those are special circumstances. I mean, let's be honest. Is there a Zion in college basketball every year?
Yes.
No. Really?
No.
I'm about to say, there's not. There is not a Zion in college basketball every single year. There's not. I think those special circumstances may be what you see. I mean, because these shoe organizations are already putting a ton of money into the schools, the programs themselves. Unless there is a sincere special talent out there, then you may see. But obviously we know what it is with the shoe companies trying to steer kids to certain schools. Now, certain schools can use in the recruiting pitch, hey, you know, we are a Nike school. We can, you know, if you choose to come here, we, you know, Nike may want to talk to you about this. We, you know, or they may be able to help them connect the dots. You know, those types of things. I mean, that's pretty obvious though. Like, we're a Nike school, we're Adidas school, and you know, that gives me a better opportunity. I think that's always been the case, you know, but it's been more hush hush under the table. But yeah, there's a whole lot of things that need to be ironed out. I think we need to get a better understanding of what each state's legislation looks like, get a better understanding of what conference legislation looks like. There's still many steps, many hoops to jump through. This is just the first step, and I'm enjoying it because you got random players out there saying, hey, I'm available. Anybody want to endorse me? Like Sasha Stefanovic from Purdue. Or the best one I've seen is a Division III tennis player, men's tennis player, who got out there and said, it's always been my dream to be the sixth best tennis player on the eighth best D3 tennis team in the nation. I was like, this dude with the green screen setup is rocking it right now. I'll throw him $20 to wear the B Scott brand.
There you go. All right. So let's get into a little bit of hot or cold. We've got a couple of questions here. We're going to do this. We're going to do a couple of hot and cold segments tonight. So this one's going to be in this area here. First of all, if you're just now tuning into the podcast, Hot or Cold, where we say a take and say whether that take is either hot or cold. Pretty simple. So the question is, there should be a cap on how players can make there should be a cap on how much players can make before they no longer have a full ride at their respective college. And I think that's a hot take. I think the NCAA is still responsible for educating these kids. And I don't know. Well, like you said, we don't really know the extent or the heights of what this thing can do. I think, there is a possibility it could end up happening where, you know, a kid's making, you know, a ton of money. And so at some point, you know, you're putting the responsibility on the student. You know, if you don't have a rule like that, I think you're putting the responsibility on the student where they, you know, are, like you said, 18 years old and they don't know what to do with all that money and they end up spending it right away. I mean, it's a lesson regardless because, you know, you hear a lot of times about, heck, ESPN made a 30 for 30 on it. The fact that, you know, players often go broke because they don't know what to do with the money. And this can be a early kind of experience, especially for the guys that are, you know, going to go pro, like, oh, I had, you know, 50,000 in whatever, you know, whatever from this endorsement and I blew it right away. And now I lost my full ride and now I don't know what to do. I think by, you know, putting a kind of cap on it, I think it will allow, you know, the players to be more fiscally responsible. I think it's the better way to go about it because I think by saying like, hey, if you make over this threshold, you lose your full ride scholarship. I think it'll, you know, kind of open the player's eyes. Whereas if you're just like, hey, whatever, the money's yours, you get a full ride and all the money you make off endorsements, I think they're, like I said, they're more likely to blow it. And I think that, you know, while that is also an educational thing, I think the more responsible thing would be like, hey, these are the stakes. We don't mind you going out and, you know, making, you know, however much, but if you make over this amount, then, you know, we're taking away that full ride. You have to pay for your college for, you know, until you make under that threshold again or whatever rule they might step up. So I think it's a hot take. I think there should be some sort of way to counterbalance that, you know, part of the spectrum.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a hot take as well. I mean, you also got to remember a lot of these, so these deals that like what they're really looking at in all this, I agree. There needs to be a cap because you can't just, Nike just can't come up and say, hey, look, you're at a Nike school. Here's $2.8 million to wear our shoes. Well, the kid was going to wear the shoes regardless because he plays for a Nike school. So that type of thing, I think is, can't do that. Nope, that's bad. Wrong. Because you're getting paid for doing nothing that you were something you were getting paid for something you were already going to do anyways. There needs to be a cap, but I don't think it's really going to become an issue because a lot of the stuff these kids are doing that right off the bat is they're signing with small brands that are new to the market. For instance, I don't know a lot about what football players are doing. I can tell you in the wrestling world, wrestlers are working with like t-shirt companies, apparel brands, small apparel brands to sell their own line of t-shirts and sweatshirts and whatnot. And I think one wrestler has even created a wrestling shoe through a small wrestling shoe boutique company, you know, those types of things, you know, they're going to make money off of it, but they're not going to make millions, but they're going to make enough that, you know, make them, you know, pad their pockets and everything. But I don't think it's going to be so much that it's going to be like, man, you're going to be like a professional athlete. Well, it's like, well, you also got to remember, this is the life that wrestlers choose after college as well. If they're good enough, they'll continue on and they'll, you know, if they're good enough, they'll have their own shoe or have their own line of apparel, that type of thing. So I don't think until somebody big steps up and slaps a huge endorsement deal down on a kid's table, I don't think the conversation's going to need to be had about a cap. But I think eventually there will be an instance that comes up and it's like, holy moly, what is this kid doing to earn that other than being a football player, you know, like the wrestlers helping design t-shirts. Okay. That's fine. It's they're putting their name and their image and their likeness on a t-shirt. I think when it's really going to become an issue is we're going to talk about it later on, but when EA Sports jumps back in the game, because you're going to have to pay the cover athlete, but also you got to remember most of these cover athletes for EA Sports are cover athletes and then boom, they're already in the pros. I don't think you're going to see like a sophomore Trevor Lawrence, just as an example, be the cover athlete of EA Sports. I think EA Sports is going to be they're going to be smart about who they choose regardless. And then, you know, it's going to come down. Well, I'll just say it's going to come down to how you're going to handle the paying of other players within the game. But I don't know. It's like I said earlier, need to look at how states legislations are laying it out and how conference legislation is laying it out. And then we can go from there. Cause right now it's just the door has been opened. Let's see what's out there. Here's what you're allowed to look. And if things start getting out of hand, then I think the NCAA will step in and say, okay, look, it's wild, wild west out there. We need to reel it back in and let's figure this out to keep it going, but within some guidelines. Because, yeah, y'all want the kids to have an opportunity to get paid, make some money. You know, they should have the right to go get paid to go sign autographs at a local car dealership. They should have that opportunity, or they should have the opportunity if they want to go appear in a local commercial, you know, what those types of things. But when you start getting, the kid made 10 grand this past year. Okay. That's more than most college students make, and, you know, and there's still the other college students are paying for college. But I think when you start having a college student that's making like millions of dollars, it's like, okay, now we need to start reeling things back in because these kids, these athletes, are, you know, they're already living more lavishly than most college students. I mean, just a few weeks ago, there was a UCLA football player that put out on TikTok. He put out a video showing the amount of food and what kind of food a UCLA football player gets in a single given day. And it was un-freaking real, the amount of food this kid got. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, by the time I got to like dinner on a Friday, I had to figure out whether I want to eat a bag of chips or, you know, not have anything for Saturday and get the cheeseburger because I was running out of dining dollars. You know, and it was like, right. Oh my gosh, like, is that chocolate milkshake on a Tuesday really worth it so I can eat later on this week? But you know, so they're you know, it's going to have some, there's going to be some issues that are going to arise from it. And I think there's going to be some more rulings that come down on it. I don't think it's never going to be completely stopped, but it's probably going to be more heavily governed in the future, just because it could get out of control. But right now I don't see it in the near future. I don't see it happening.
Well, as you can see, there was a few times that I went over my my dining plus. So, I mean, you know, I definitely understand. I definitely understand that, you know, the my parents kind of helped me out with that. Sometimes I was like, hey, I ate too much again. Can you guys put a little bit more money in there? That'd be great. Second question, the NCAA should reinstate athletes and victories that were taken away as punishment as punishment for money those athletes made legally. Now, the reason why I made that caveat is because, like, there are some scandals that have arisen where, I at minimum, the morality of it is questionable. So that's why I was like, I don't want to, you know, say like, oh yeah, they should reinstate Louisville's, you know, national championship because I'm pretty sure some of that stuff was illegal.
Any monetary benefits.
Yeah, exactly.
Benefits of another sort.
Yeah, exactly. So. You know, and I think the same with like Miami's scandal as well. So this is more for like Reggie Bush, the Fab Five. That's kind of been the main arguments that have been in the ether. For me, as much as like, look, the fan, you know, the fan Craig Crash wants to give, you know, thinks it's silly because we all know that Reggie Bush on the field, which is what he earned everything from, you know, Reggie Bush on the field is what won those games. Reggie Bush on the field is what won the Heisman. Reggie Bush on the field should not be punished for Reggie Bush off the field. Give the man back his stuff. Same with the Fab Five. The Fab Five, you know, I read an article that was like, they've basically been written out of Michigan's existence. The banners are taken down, all that stuff. And while like, it's kind of crappy in my opinion, like I think it shouldn't be like that. Like, it's a slippery slope and you can't go back and change what the rules were at the time. Like, you know, it's, you know, the thing I think of that kind of perfectly sums it up is, you know, I know I equate a lot of things back to baseball, but Armando Galarraga, you know, his perfect game. We all know, you knew like at watching even the broadcast and seeing the replays that, you know, the runner was out, you know, should have had a perfect game. And so you could go back and overturn it, but it doesn't make it for the, you know, the fact that like, well, at the time there wasn't replay. They couldn't go back and look at it just because there's replay now. And if that play were to happen today, it would have been reviewed and he would have been ruled out and given a perfect game. Like, you still can't go back and do it because that wasn't the rule at the time. Just like, you know, and heck, going off that same Armando Galarraga example, I would say Reggie Bush is more noticeable for that Heisman that he doesn't have because, you know, of what the circumstances are. I mean, you know, obviously we all know recent Heisman winners, you know, but sometimes you forget, you know, RG3 has a Heisman, you know, Johnny Manziel has a Heisman. But once you go back, you know, kind of off, like I can't tell you who won the 1998 Heisman. But I know Reggie Bush won a Heisman, and I know that it got taken away from him. I think it was, what, 2004 or 5? Something like that. So, I mean, you know, there are some Heisman winners that you don't even remember. But you definitely remember Reggie Bush. Just like there's some perfect games you don't remember, but you definitely remember Armando Galarraga. So, you just can't go back and change the rules. As much as I would like to, you just can't do it.
Yeah, I agree. This is a cold take. And there was other reasons. I mean, okay, Reggie Bush didn't like wasn't given money. An agent gave his family a house, essentially,
right,
for him to sign with them. That's, you know, at the time that was wrong. And I think in the NIL thing, players can't receive benefits from gifts from an agent to choose to sign with the agent. That's, you know, that's not name, image, likeness. That has nothing to do with that. So yeah, there's that. And I think also with the Fab Five, it wasn't, you know, there was a guy that was, you know, hey, I need $20 to buy some pizza tonight. Okay. So those types of things, if that was the full extent for the Fab Five, then I would say yes, because that's kind of petty. But there was other things there as well. I know there was also things with gambling and
there was a booster, I think, that was given a lot of money to, like, I think Chris Webber and some of the other players.
He was caught up in a gambling ring. The booster was caught up in a gambling ring. So they never proved it, but there may have been some, you know, him giving money to players for favors on the court, you know, those types of things. None of that was ever proven. So there's a lot more like under the, like, not really top notch things that should be looked at for both situations. So I don't think they should be reinstated. Now, do I think like the Heisman Foundation's doing Reggie Bush dirty by just completely ghosting him when he's been trying to get a hold of them recently? Yeah, I think so. It's like, you know, hear him out at least. I think the Heisman should at least look to give, I don't know. You know, I mean, did his mom having a house closer to him in Southern California affect his play on the field? No, it didn't. You know, he wasn't receiving the benefits himself. I think if anything, the Reggie Bush one has more credence to be looked back upon, to be overturned, because it wasn't him receiving the benefits. I mean, maybe he did receive a car. I think, I can't remember, but it was mostly his family receiving the benefits.
Right. So, but I mean, I guess you could make the argument that if his family received the house and he lived in the house, then he's receiving the benefit.
I don't think he lived. I don't think he did.
Well, I mean, he never went home ever.
Well, I mean, at some point, yeah.
But that's what I'm saying.
I'm not saying it's like instead of living on campus, he lived in the family house.
No, you know, but what I'm saying is like, I mean, if he took up residence over the summer at that house, then technically, I'm just saying that's how you can spin it.
At the same time, if we're gonna look at Reggie Bush's that offense on Reggie Bush, then why was there nothing done about Cam Newton's dad taking thousands of dollars from, I think, Mississippi State? You know, when Cam Newton transferred from Florida, like, why was none of that ever looked at? And why was Cam Newton like, oh, it's fine. Cam Newton didn't know. Well, did Reggie Bush know?
I mean,
seriously. Like, so we're going to punish Reggie Bush and like completely condemn him. But then when Cam, you know, because Cam Newton was the face of college football at the time, it's easy to go back and say, oh, we're going to take this away from you because, you know, some things happened. You know, but when they're the face of college football at the time, oh yeah, then, you know, that's a different story. So I think the Reggie Bush situation has much more of an argument than the Fab Five situation does, just because there's other circumstances that were just kind of like, oh, we can't penalize the player for the wrongdoing of the father. You know, it's like, we can penalize Reggie Bush for the wrongdoing of his mother, but, you know, Cam Newton gets off scot-free because he doesn't have a relationship with his father. Okay. How, really? He doesn't?
That's why he's taking money, apparently.
That's why his dad's taking money for him. And, like,
yeah.
You don't think the school that offered him that, the coach that offered him that money, didn't do his research to find, like, why would you offer his dad X amount of money to get him to come play for you when everybody knows that Cam Newton doesn't have a relationship with his father? I mean, let's be honest. It's so, but I still think it's a cold take. It is what it is. I mean, nobody's going to go back and say, oops, our bad.
Right.
They're just not.
All right. So we are encroaching here on the 50 minute mark. So we're going to get to the ads, but one more thing that I wanted to, you know, touch upon, and you mentioned it real quick, B Scott, is the fact that like this, what has been talked about now is that the EA is now considering using real players in NCAA 2023. So that'll be really cool. And like you said, they'll have to figure that all out. But that's actually really intriguing because they had obviously talked about not doing that, even though we all know that there would have been hundreds of people, you know, uploading the real rosters anyway. So it didn't really matter. But it is cool to see, like, you can actually, like, that may actually happen. So that'll be really cool to look at. But before we get into the basketball conversation, let's go ahead and get to our friends of the show.
Are you tired of your same old lunch hour of sitting and scrolling through your apps on your smartphone? Have you thought about playing a board game with your coworkers? Eat Lunch and Board Game is a podcast dedicated to telling you about board games that are great for lunchtime fun and some that are probably better saved for after work hours. I've been playing games at my office for over 4 years now where I have made new friends and business connections that have been very useful. Board games build bridges.
All right, so now on to some hoops conversation. We're going to talk about the Indiana Pacers, which one thing that did happen, you know, while we were on hiatus was something that we were hoping would happen, B. Scott, and that is that Nate Bjorkgren was fired. And who is taking his place was somebody that I know that, like, I didn't even think was an option, and that is Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle is back with the Indiana Pacers. He coached the Pacers from 2003 to 2007. He had a 181-147 record, which amounts to a .552 winning percentage. He also made 3 playoff appearances and 1 conference finals appearance. The Pacers have also hired top assistant Lloyd Pierce from the Hawks. He will assist Rick Carlisle, which would be really cool, especially after the, you know, crazy run that the Hawks had through the Eastern Conference playoffs. And, you know, honestly, like, I'm very pleased with the hire and the direction that the coaching staff is going. Like I said, I didn't consider Rick Carlisle even an option. You know, we've kind of gone back and forth. You know, my prediction on who might be the next head coach was a former Pacers head coach, just not Rick Carlisle. And so you're kind of like trying to figure out, you know, what they are going to do. And so I said Mark Jackson because he dealt with a young Warriors team before they fired him for Steve Kerr. So I was saying, oh, you know, and that was one that I think it was like 8 points, you know, 9 seconds or one of the like Bleacher Report, you know, fan sided, you know, places that said, you know, what would be a possible good fit. And I happen to agree. But also, you know, Rick Carlisle, what's really nice about him, and, you know, we know we had Luca, we know he had Dirk, you know, for a long time, but, you know, he has a good ability. You know, I feel like he gets the most out of the rosters that he has. And I'm very excited about that. He does know the culture of the Indiana Pacers. He did win the 2010 NBA championship with Dirk and Jason Kidd over LeBron's Heat. So, I mean, even if you want to say, well, yeah, but he had Jason Terry and Jason Kidd and he had, you know, Dirk, you know, he had Dirk. Well, yeah, but the Heat had
the hero of that series was it like JJ Barea?
Something like that. Yeah. So like, but yeah, he was going up against, you know, Eric Spoelstra, who we've now learned is actually a better coach. Yeah, because normally we thought like, oh, hey, he's just a talking head, you know, just kind of stepping aside for LeBron. But he actually has turned into to be a really good coach. And then, you know, you had Chris Bosh, you know, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. So, yeah, I think the advantage still went to the Heat there, but yet the Mavericks pulled that out, which is really cool. And then, you know, yeah, they had, like I said, you know, yeah, they had some recognizable names, the Mavericks did, but it's just intriguing that he won a title with more than just, you know, a couple of superstars and then the rest just kind of roster filler. He was able to get the most out of that roster, which was really cool to see. And I think Rick Carlisle also, you know, we talk about NBA head coaches, you know, the coaches that, you know, are actually really good coaches in the league. You know, we talk about Brad Stevens, we talk about Greg Popovich. I mean, Rick Carlisle isn't better than those two, but he definitely is in the conversation of being one of the best, like, coaches in the sport. So I'm really excited about this hire, and I think also what's good too is I think that he's a good fit, whether or not, depending on what the Pacers do, because we still don't know like how this Pacers team is going to look. I mean, but he's not a hire where you think like, oh yeah, he's definitely, you know, a championship or bust, but it doesn't also seem like he wouldn't be opposed. Like, you know, the team is going to be better, but also, you know, if they do decide to rebuild, I think Rick Carlisle can go through that as well and still, you know, have a good team on his hands.
Yeah, I think this is a great hire. Honestly, I had a hunch when Rick Carlisle left the Dallas Mavericks that this might be the move. I don't know why I felt like it. It just kind of seemed the timing, like Pacers fire Nate Bjorkgren. All of a sudden, Rick, and they're waiting. All of a sudden, Rick Carlisle comes, leaves the Mavericks after he's done with their run in the playoffs. And I'm like, the Pacers were waiting for something. They were waiting for something. And you know, a lot of us thought maybe Brad Stevens, and then the old Brad Stevens to the front office of the Celtics happened, and that threw that idea out the window. But then it was
just an odd thing to me that he like that Brad Stevens just all of a sudden's like, yeah, I'm not coaching anymore. I'm just going to be in the front office.
I'm running the team. Like, what?
Okay, bud. Sounds good. You do that.
Do you? But I love this move. The Pacers, I don't think they could have afforded to go out and gotten another retread or another, you know, a guy that got fired by what I mean by retread, because Rick Carlisle wasn't fired, and Rick Carlisle never was technically fired by the Pacers. He resigned from the Pacers, went to the Mavericks, now he came back to the Pacers. So I think it's a perfect fit because, you know, the locker room was technically in shambles, and you need to get somebody in there that A, the players that is going to command the respect of the players, and B, the players are going to respect. He's got the pedigree. He's got the experience. The players are going to respect him, hands down. And he's going to get this respect from the players. He's already put. From rumor has it, he's putting together quite a coaching staff, which may include former Butler player Ronald Norred. So we still may get that Butler connection anyways. And then it looks like Calbert Chaney's going to remain with the Pacers, which is a big deal because, you know, he's like a staple in Indiana basketball. So I think it's going to be a great hire. I think what this shows also, I mean, look at his 4-year, $29 million contract. You don't typically hear the financials leaked for a coach's contract, which I found interesting that they did, but I think that was done intentionally. I think that now sends a message to free agents and to the roster. Hey, we are in this to win. We're not in it just to be middlings or rebuild or whatever we have been. We are now wanting to go forward as a winning organization. And I think now bringing in a big name like Rick Carlisle could potentially put the Pacers on the map for some higher level free agents, because the respect that he commands throughout the entire NBA, I've never heard any player have a bad thing to say about Rick Carlisle, especially when you got the endorsement of Dirk Nowitzki. That's going to go a long way for a lot of players because they all respect Dirk, obviously. One of the interesting tidbits I've heard is that it could help with, I know we're always hoping and wishing on here, but it could potentially help with a bringing in a free agent like Kawhi Leonard. And not just because of Rick Carlisle, Indiana kind of suits Kawhi. He's a quieter guy. It's a quieter market. Kind of a match there. You may have it. So there, you know, there's already people looking at the Pacers differently than they were recently because of Rick Carlisle. Now, unfortunately, because, you know, in the same light, they're already looking at the Pacers like throwing out bogus trade rumors as well. Malcolm Brogdon and a second round pick for Ben Simmons.
Okay. No.
Yeah, we never offered that.
No.
Sit down, Philadelphia, you're drunk.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and just decline that for you. It's not going to happen.
No. So I love this move. I think this is a great move for the Pacers, and I can't wait because, you know, he's got a winning pedigree, and the players are going to love playing for him.
And it's interesting that you mentioned Kawhi, because when you said that, it made me think, like, Kawhi has had his most success. Like, yeah, it's been an okay run with the Clippers, but he's had his most success in small markets, San Antonio, Toronto. So, heck, I mean, Now you're going to get me hyped up for Kawhi, and then it's not going to happen. But, I mean, you know, you never know. It could be interesting to see. And, yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? And what we'll talk about a little bit later here is the fact that, like, hey, maybe now that, you know, the NBA Finals is Phoenix and Milwaukee, maybe that plus Rick Carlisle equals a, you know, well-known talent coming to the Pacers.
I think,
you know,
it now shows the rest of the NBA, hey, the super team thing, like, joining up with LeBron and that type of deal, it may be dead.
Fizzling out for sure.
It may be fizzling out because, one, all these big name superstars are getting older, and all of a sudden now the young superstars are in these small markets and they're leading their teams to NBA championships.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Weird.
Weird how that happens. LeBron's getting old and the Nets experiment failed.
The Nets just, Walker. You know, yeah, yeah, right. One other thing that also happened over the Pacers offseason so far is they did get the 13th pick in the 2021 draft. And so the question is, who do the Pacers pick? It's always tough. And by the way, first round, I don't know what they've got in the second round, but you know, it's always so tough because it's literally two rounds, and you know, I've often, you know, made the, you know, equation to the NFL draft where if, you know, you stack them both up, then, you know, technically, you know, if you're picking in the middle of the first round, you're basically picking in like the second or third round of the NFL draft. So think about that as far as like talent wise, what you're looking at. So it's just so hard to tell, especially because I feel like the college game, there's not really that player that like jumps off the table. And especially, you know, with the Pacers, you're not getting that with the 13th pick anyway. And plus with everybody being able to play, you know, basically anywhere on the court, basically, it's tough to be like, okay, well, what do they need? Well, this player could always fill this need. All right, well, then where do you actually go? So the route I went was this with what they could do with their first pick. Jeremy Lamb is off the books after this season. So I said that, and has been often injured. So I said the Pacers would go after shooting guard. I can't say the word. It's literally, you know, one, a name of somebody, the name of my sister and the name of somebody in the MCT on the MCT podcast. Chris Duarte from Oregon. He is a strong shooter. CBS described him as Klay Thompson-esque, which I know a lot of times on this show when we've talked about, you know,
really
whatever. Yeah, exactly. You know what? Go somewhere else with those looks.
I'm sorry. It's just Oregon.
What's wrong with Oregon?
I don't know. This is a school that promises all their players are going to play some kind of ridiculous positionless basketball. And then you've got centers that want to pretend they're a point guard and jack up threes when they have no business doing it and bringing the ball up the court. It's a joke of a program. I mean, they take recruits because they promise these guys so many things. And it's just like,
look, really, all I know,
I don't know. They play like a positionless basketball. They play a positionless up-tempo basketball that just scores a ton of points and then fails miserably on the defensive end. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, cause hey, look, who was the guy? He plays for Memphis. I forget his name, that from Oregon.
Ja Morant.
No, he didn't play.
I know.
Brandon Brooks.
Yeah. Hey, all I know is, like I said, CBS described him as a strong shooter, you know, Klay Thompson-esque, which, like I said, we've been mentioning a few times, that we wish the Pacers would go get him. And he has a solid defensive skill set that can be molded. So that's what I'm thinking. Like I said, it's just such a toss up, as far as who they should go out and get. Cause like I said, you know, play, if you're a guard, you can play both guard positions and both forward positions, or at least small forward. You can pretty much, if you play center, you can play power forward. If you play power forward, you can be a small forward or a center. Like, you can be anywhere on the court, essentially. So it's hard to be like, well, this is a definite team need. But so yeah, I went with Chris Duarte out of Oregon.
So for me, the player that there's two players that I have my eye on the most that are going to be around right around there. The first one I've heard a lot of people talk about is Moses Moody out of Arkansas. He's a 6'6", 205-pound guard. So he's a bigger-sized guard, which is a good thing. He's not technically a point guard, but I think he can be. You know, this past season, he averaged, like, what was it, 16.8 points per game. You know, only shot 42% from the field, 35% from three, but in free throws were 81%. So he's got the upside that everybody likes to talk about in the NBA draft. But for me, the player that I really, really hope the Pacers can land, if they're going to stick at 13, Davion Mitchell, the point guard out of Baylor. You know, he's got what the Pacers typically like. They like guys with leadership experience. They've played longer than just 1 year. He's tough. He plays tough defense. This year he upped his scoring. So, you know, he really, really focused on getting better on the offensive end, because freshman year, he averaged 3.7 points. Sophomore year, 9.9. This year, it was up to 14 points per game. He shot 51% from the field, but 44.7% from three-point range and 64% from the free throw line, which isn't great from the free throw line. But I look at that three-point percentage, and that really stands out to me the most. The other big thing, I mean, it's like, you know, 5.5 steals per game or assists per game, almost 2 steals per game, almost a block a game for somebody that's 6'2". That's unbelievable. And then 2.7 rebounds per game. So this guy plays tough defense. He was a leader for the national championship team. He would be, I think, a good fit to, if you look to move Aaron Holiday or something, as a good fit for your future point guard. He was a distributor. I mean, he kind of just fits everything the Pacers look for in leadership roles. But unfortunately, the player the Pacers are most likely going to take, Corey Kispert out of Gonzaga, a 6'7", 220-pound forward, white guy forward that, you know, averaged averaged 18 points per game. But, you know, that's just the type of player the Pacers go for. They're going to look for the next TJ Leaf.
I mean, you know, TJ Leaf is a legend. So, I mean,
but hey, can you imagine lining up two former Gonzaga players next to each other, and Corey Kispert and Domas Sabonis?
There you go.
Working out already with Domas. Why not go for another?
Exactly. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what the Pacers do end up doing in the draft. When is the draft? Is it like it's in July? Is it the end of July?
I think so. I don't know.
Something like that. Anyway,
everything's gotten so scrambled by COVID. Can we just get back to like the normal schedule so we know when things are again?
Essentially, that'll happen this year because it'll be after the NBA ends. I'm assuming the NBA is then going
to
still start.
Should have already happened.
Right, because doesn't it happen in June?
Should have been over a couple weeks ago.
Right. So, and then they'll start back up again in October, right? They'll just do that normal schedule. The NFL will be going on its normal schedule, which, I mean, it was last year too, but baseball's on its normal schedule. So, I mean, heck, by the time we get to, you know, the basketball season again, it'll all be hopefully normal again. But yeah, before we get to the NBA Finals, we do want to remind you that you can like us on Facebook, Crash Course Podcast. Go follow us on Twitter at Crash Course FM. You can go subscribe to our YouTube channel, 3C Media. That's where you can find not only the rebroadcast of the Crash Course Podcast, but you can also find the MCT Podcast, where Tade, Chris, and Michael all talk about some other goings-on in the world of sports. They've been popping off lately, so make sure you guys go over there, subscribe. And then you can watch us live every week, twitch.tv/3cmedia. And remember, you can also hear us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course Podcast. So before we get out of here, we want to talk about the NBA Finals. They are finally set. Game one will be on Tuesday. So if you're hearing this on the podcast audio side of things, or you're watching it on YouTube, it is tonight. Milwaukee Bucks versus the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix won both games in the season series. As far as the Bucks go, first round in the Eastern Conference, they did sweep the Heat, got revenge on the Heat, who I believe swept them last year. In the Eastern Conference semifinals, they did defeat the Nets 4-3. They did lose the first two games of that series, so that's pretty crazy that they end up winning 4 of the last 5 there. And then they faced the upstart Hawks in the East Finals, and they did defeat the Atlanta Hawks 4-2, which the biggest kind of surprise from there is I didn't realize the Atlanta Hawks didn't have an NBA championship. I figured they would have won one with Dominique Wilkins, but yeah, I know. Yeah, but no, they have.
Do the Bucks?
Bucks don't either. No. Or at least not. I mean, they don't have titles. It's like the Pacers. They have titles, just not NBA. And in that series, you know, the Bucks, you know, they did win 4-2. The series was tied at 2, and then the Bucks won the last 2 and did it without Giannis, which is pretty crazy as well. Giannis has been a monster in these playoffs, 9 games scoring 30 or more, 13 games with double-digit rebounds. He does have 13 double-doubles. He's been – I mean, hey, he's lived up to his name, the Greek Freak. And then as far as the Suns go – their first round was against the Lakers, where they trailed 2-1, but ended up winning that series in 6. In the semifinals out west, they did sweep Denver, and in the West Finals, they defeated the Clippers 4-2. They led 3-1. Some people, because I think the last time they were in the playoffs, they blew a 3-1 lead, so there was some worry when the Clippers won game five that there was going to be another repeat of that. But no, the Suns held strong, and they end up winning. Chris Paul and Devin Booker have led the charge for Phoenix. The duo have combined for 45 points per game. So before we get into our predictions, we do have a hot or cold question, and that is hot or cold, a Milwaukee Phoenix NBA Finals is good for the NBA. Again, it's kind of like the Reggie Bush thing. Personally, it's a hot take for me. I think it is good for the NBA because I think the NBA, you know, has been too long in this thought process of, you know, basically stuck in the 1950s of the only way that anybody will ever hear about you is if you're in the big market. Like, I don't like you, the only way you got to go to L.A. or New York, they'll never know you if you go anywhere else. I don't know why I'm talking like that, but that's what I feel like. You know, the thought process is the only way to win is if you team up with your buddies and you go to a big market, because that's the only way you're going to be able to win. That's where all the big endorsement deals are. That's where all the big, you know, that's the only way you'll, you know, make the most amount of money is if you do that. And instead, you know, now we have, I've been pulling for the Suns the whole time because I want Chris Paul to get a championship. I think that'd be awesome. But you know, it's just it's nice to see small market teams, you know, kind of have the success because, you know, we've talked about it a lot on the podcast. Heck, we've talked about it for, you know, 4 years essentially of like, man, it stinks being a small market team because you literally don't matter because you're never going to get a, you know, a big name free agent, no matter how good you are. You're never going to get, you know, the respect you deserve because you don't have, you know, 12 superstars on your team. Like, it doesn't matter. It's, and you know, the NBA is very heavily catered to their casual fans. I think it's a good thing that we're getting this series between the Suns and the Bucks, because I think it's kind of giving back to the diehard fans that actually watch basketball night in and night out and know how good of a series this is going to be between these two teams, instead of the casual fan that'll be like, what, there's no Steph, there's no LeBron,
there's no LeBron.
Why do I even watch? I'm very
root for,
but
LeBron signed with one of these teams, did he?
Right, yeah. I didn't remember LeBron going to the Suns. Statistically, it's bad for the NBA because 2006 was the last NBA Finals to not feature LeBron, Steph, or a major market team. It was Dallas against Miami, which averaged 12.6 million viewers. Now, if you want to go, well, Miami's technically a big market because it's, you know, in Florida and it's Miami and bright lights.
I'm surprised Miami's not a big market.
Right, yeah, exactly. So if you wanted to kind of – it's on that, like, kind of B tier, like right on the edge. So
that's interesting. That is very – I think, yeah, that's really interesting. I always considered them a major market.
Well, and just in case you like do consider them, because like I said, I do think they're kind of fringe. 2005 was Spurs Pistons, which San Antonio and Detroit, both small market, 100%. Yeah. They averaged 12.7 million viewers. Since then, only last year's finals had lower ratings, which was, I mean, understandably smack dab, also in the middle of baseball playoffs and the NFL season. So that could also have attributed to those lower ratings between the Heat and the Lakers. So that's why. So like technically theoretically it's bad for the NBA, but I think it's good. It's the NBA probably looks at it as bad because they're like, what do we do? It's two small market teams. What do we do? Nobody will ever watch this. When in essence, I think it's actually going to be good because you're going to see, you know, Devin Booker is going to, you know, it's kind of like what we've said when we've talked about IndyCar, where you have all these kind of young names, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier. You know, you have Devin Booker, Giannis, Chris Middleton, you know, some of these players that DeAndre Ayton, that you haven't really been in the limelight yet, that are going to get that opportunity to shine, show how good they are. And I think that's going to really shine through, no pun intended, you know, with the Suns being in it. But yeah, I think it will be good. I think technically right now the NBA season is bad, and statistically there's really no way to say, well, it won't be bad, but I think ultimately it will be good. So the official take for me is cold, but I mean, if I'm going with my heart, it's actually a hot take.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to actually say this is a hot take. I know in the short term, it is not good for the NBA just because of ratings. But I think in the long term, it's actually going to now, like I stated earlier, I think it's going to help spread the competition more evenly again in the NBA. It's going to make it so it's not just a three-team race each or four-team race every year. You know, it's different teams now having the opportunity. You know, it makes, I think over, I will, like I, okay, so let me get it better worded. In the short term, the ratings are probably going to suck because the markets are not as high, and LA people are going to be like, who cares? Or the LeBron people are going to say, who cares? LeBron's not in it. Why am I going to watch? But I think it could actually maybe potentially have a reverse reaction, because your everyday average NBA fan may be going, this isn't the same old, same old. I can actually watch some new blood in there. I can watch the new exciting players in Devin Booker. I can watch Giannis. I can watch this and not hate it, because people are so sick and tired of the LeBron James, the super teams. And people can turn this on and go, this is refreshing. These are like two good teams that aren't just loaded with superstars. People love Giannis. People love Devin Booker. Heck, I'm not a huge NBA guy. I don't watch much outside of the Pacers. I didn't watch them much at all this year even. But I'm going to tune in because guess what? I want to see the Phoenix Suns win because I want to see Etuan Moore get an NBA championship. You know, there's other players that I want to tune in to see. And in the past, I'm like, I just don't want to watch LeBron win another championship or his antics on the court. I got somebody looked at me funny. And
especially last year when it was LeBron, and then the Heat still have that like bad, even if it's, I mean, Jimmy Butler, you know, obviously had his drama with TJ Warren last year, which also made you kind of like not want to watch the Heat, but also like, I don't know, whatever it is, like the Heat still like have that residual effect. Yeah. There's still, you know, a nemesis in my eyes, even though like obviously the LeBron and D-Wade years are long behind them. It's still like,
see, that's the thing. Talking about, you know, we talked off air about teams that you hate, but players that you respect.
Right.
D-Wade.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm actually excited for this NBA Finals. It's refreshing to see different. It's refreshing to see these young teams that are going to go out there and just going to play hard and win a championship. I'm so excited for that. I mean, the storylines are so great. Giannis has finally got to the NBA Finals. The Bucks have finally gotten there after being so close and, you know, having one of the best teams for the last couple of years. The Phoenix Suns, the team that narrowly missed making the playoffs last year in the bubble. They were the bubble darlings. They just went on an absolute tear. Missed the playoffs still to go on to this year. And weren't they like the one or two seed? They're a high seed.
Right. Because they played LeBron. So yeah, they were the two seed.
And
who was the one seed?
To knock off the defending champs and the super team, and then make the NBA Finals after not making the playoffs last year. I mean, the storylines are just great. It's not just LeBron James is in the NBA Finals again. I mean, yeah, that's typically what it is.
Right.
It's typically what it is. And it's the same old, same old. So I really cannot wait to hear what like the morning talk shows have to say, because I've been out of the loop being out in the middle. I mean, I was basically camping in Wisconsin over the weekend. So I don't know what's going on in the world. I actually want to tune in to see what Stephen A. Smith has to say about this NBA finals matchup. Like, what are the guys that are the big LeBron homers? They're probably losing their minds because they have nothing that they how can I tie this into LeBron?
Well, they're going to probably be talking about how this, you know, kind of like what I've said the NBA's take is most likely on this NBA Finals, which is like, oh, man, no one cares about the snooze fest because it's not, you know, a team from L.A. It's not a team from New York. It's not a team, you know, from, you know, a major market that has LeBron or KD or Steph. So who cares, you know? That's probably what
the take. Golden State's not even considered a major market. They're a small market.
To me, like, I don't know. I feel like it's the same kind of effect as like that Miami has. Like Miami and Golden State for me are kind of that B tier of they're a major market, but they're not. They're technically a small market, but they're in a state where like they're in a state that's desirable to go to, warm weather, good like place to live. You know, you're still like if you go to you know, Golden State, yeah, technically you're in Oakland, but also you're in California. So I mean, it's kind of in that B tier where like, yeah, it's not a major market, but at the same time, it's still, you know, California. Whereas you go to the Heat, it's not a major market in Miami, but it's still Florida. So that's kind of what I attribute it to. Just like kind of like, I'm sure, you know, San Antonio, you know, they're in Texas, which is a bigger state, but they're in San Antonio. So like, that's kind of what I attribute it to, because they're not in Dallas, you know, they're not in LA, I don't really think there is a major market in Florida, but you know, so there's not, you know, major markets, but they're still in states where it's desirable to go live, you know, and they're still well-known, highly populated areas. You know what I mean? It's not just, you know, because obviously there's a difference between, there's small market teams, but there's a difference between, you know, Oakland and Miami and then Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm really excited for this series as well. So why don't we get into our prediction before we get out of here? For me, my prediction on who wins this series, I'm going to say it's going to be the Suns in seven. I was going to say in six because they haven't had a series yet to go seven games, but I also think that this is going to be a very highly contested series. It's going to go down to the wire, I think. And I think Phoenix just has the more complete roster and is more battle tested. I mean, I think Phoenix has like six or seven players on their roster that averages, that averages double digits, you know, throughout the course of these playoffs. Whereas, you know, I think the Bucks only have two. It's Giannis and Middleton. So I think that, you know, the East kind of hasn't been the East of years past. The West has been, I think, tougher than ever. So I think the Suns are a little bit more battle tested, a little bit more ready for a series like this. So I'm going to go Suns in seven.
Yeah, I'm going to go, this is such a tough toss up. I'm going to go Suns in seven as well, just because Giannis does have some injury concerns, obviously he's been okay, but you just never know with a knee, if it may flare up or if the wrong tweak it the wrong way and it goes down again. I'm going with the Suns though in seven, just because I feel like Devin Booker, if he needs to put the team on his back, he can. And he's just playing at a different level right now. So I got to go with the Suns.
Now we do have question, a baseball related question from the chat from Dark Sage. We're waiting on him to actually relay that question to us now. But yeah, I think it's going to be a fun series. I do want to see Chris Paul win an NBA championship, I think. And what is wild too is that, like, I think, you know, in his time with the Clippers and in his time with the Rockets, he's kind of like faded to where, like, we forgot. I mean, obviously he's not Chris Paul in his prime, but we forgot like how much of a difference maker he was like on the Hornets, People, I think people forget Chris Paul on the Hornets, who was just out here, you know. Basically, I remember when there was a while there when it was the New Orleans Hornets, and they were, you know, making comparisons between like, oh, it's Drew Brees and Chris Paul, the two gunslingers in New Orleans. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see if Chris Paul is able to finally get his title. And yeah, Giannis is going to be interesting to watch. It is cool to see Milwaukee finally get there after so many years of just not being able to get past. Cause that's what, I mean, that's kind of what we talked about when we went through our preview of the NBA playoffs. Is like, okay, a lot of the top seeds are teams that just are, you know, typically can't get over the hump. You have Milwaukee, who, you know, has not been able to, you know, get past like the conference finals. They always seem to slip up somewhere. The 76ers, you know, did it again. They didn't make it past the second round. So it is going to be fun to watch that. So I'll go ahead and start wrapping it up here since we're still waiting on the question from Dark Sage in the chat. But we want to remind you that you can watch us every week live, twitch.tv/3tmedia. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know, your question. Give us your questions live. We will answer them. And then also, remember, you can like us on Facebook, Crash Course Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Crash Course FM. Go subscribe to our YouTube channel, 3C Media. That's where you can find not only this podcast, but also the MCT podcast, our YouTube exclusive podcast, where Chris, Todd A, and Michael get you kind of caught up. If you want to think about it, this is kind of the beginning of the week show. And then as time progresses, they're kind of the end of the week show. So they come out on Saturdays, so you won't want to miss that. Make sure you go subscribe. And then also, what am I missing here? I said you can, you know, okay. So the only thing I'm missing here is that you can listen to us every week on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course Crash. I can't talk tonight. What is my deal, man? I am like stuck. I think it is. It's just like shaking off that rust. I just can't do it. But yeah, you can listen to us every week on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever podcasts can be heard. You can hear the Crash Course Podcast. B. Scott, where can they find you?
You can actually find me back again on Brandon_Scott87. I'm actually back to life again. I've been tweeting from there, and it feels good. I can tweet my own things.
Yeah, now you can by yourself become the most hated Twitter profile on Twitter.
Challenge accepted.
Now you gotta just start just tweeting out outlandish stuff and save some sticks. All right, well, that'll be all for this week's podcast. We'll be back again with another great show, most likely talking about some MLB All-Star stuff as well as that. It's that time of year again. One of my favorite times of the year. It's going to be a lot of fun, although we will probably talk about the horrendous jerseys that are going to be worn for the MLB All-Star game. But that is all coming next week. But until then, have a good one, everybody. See you then.